on 1116 SEN. On the grid with Tony Shebeki for Bendix Brakes. At your next car service, ask your mechanic to fit Bendix Brakes. Don't accept anything else.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome. You are on the grid here on 1116
SEN. The NBA Finals.
Melbourne's home of sport. Thank you, Steve Salisbury. Your time will come soon enough, mate. You don't need to interrupt my program. We appreciate that. I think Steve Salisbury is in Moscow or something at the moment. Well, he did well to get on. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk some motor racing now for the next half an hour or so. And doing that with me, I say a very good morning to my old mate Richard Crowell. Hello, Crowsey.
Morning, Spector. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Very well. We had a great weekend last weekend down at Phillip Island. An exciting weekend with some fantastic racing, endurance racing for the Porsche Carrera Cup teams and also the Australian GT Endurance Championship up and running for 2017. The weather sort of held out, didn't it? But it made it was ugly enough to make it just a little bit exciting.
Yeah, the Sunday weather was about as unpredictable as a standard Richmond season in the AFL, I think, Shebeck.
Yeah, settled down.
I had to early days. it was one of those funny days where you'd walk outside and you'd look to the west and it would be bright and sunny, and look to the east and it was dark and gloomy, and the sort of two met over the top of Phillip Island, so you'd have a bit of sunshine and some light rain occurring at the same time. But that's a standard day down there. It was a good day. It was a good weekend, good racing, very competitive throughout all the categories, and the GT race was pretty feisty. The Carrera Cup stuff, I thought, was outstanding. Very, very competitive, that series. And, an appropriate way we should mention it was the 100th round of the Shannon's National since its formation in 2006, so it was a good way to celebrate, and a bit of a party on the weekend down at a very, very cool racetrack.
Yeah, it certainly was. And we should mention, too, that the addition of the Pro-Am into the series is a fantastic addition. Not that the series needs it, I mean, especially for Carrera Cup. That is an extremely competitive series as it is, but to throw in that second driver in the GT champion, probably more in championship more so, it just really just lifts it up just another cog and takes the excitement factor to another level.
Yeah, it spices it up, doesn't it, in both forms. It brings in more variables. It brings in the pit stops, especially to Carrera Cup. GT's already got a lot of that in their championship. They're more a long-distance series. Carrera Cup's a sprint race format. So it just spices it up, adds another level. But it brings other drivers in, and it's cool to see guys like Tim Slade, Lee Holdsworth, both really enjoyed their weekend driving different cars, get them out of their comfort zone, put them in different race cars, different to drive, a different experience. In the end, they're all racing car drivers and they love racing cars, even if it is their profession. And it's just nice to see them in that environment. And at the same time, it's nice to see the AM drivers in Carrera Cup, the part-timers, the gentleman racers, whatever you want to call them. It's nice to see them pair up with a superstar or, you know, a gun driver and get some outright results, get up and play with the big guys in the series and have a real crack, which is cool to see.
Yeah, it certainly is. Now, you and I are lovers of open-wheeler racing, and we saw some great racing down at Phillip Island last weekend in the Formula 4, the Camsjaco Australian Formula 4 Championship on the weekend down at the Shannon's Nationals at Phillip Island. But I tell you what, we're all excited about the launch and the introduction of the F5000s, or in supercars case, the Super 5000 car, which was launched this weekend. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, interesting thing, and it's a project that's been sort of delivered in secret, I suppose, over the last 2 years. The car's been developed by Oscar Fiorinotto, famed engineer. Super Shock is his company, and he provides the dampers for a lot of the cars in the supercar paddock.
Now, you see, what surprised me about this is that Oscar Fiorinotto is a South Australian, and anything that happens in the world of motorsport in South Australia, you know about.
Yeah.
I cannot believe that you did not know that this was being developed.
Who's to say I didn't know?
Oh, well, you said it was a secret.
Maybe I was under orders not to talk about it.
That's true. Fair
confidentiality
point.
Is a thing to that.
Fair point.
Yeah, anyway, let's just move on. That's 1-1 with my Richmond gag. That's not bad.
Oh, good
job. Yeah, look, interesting project. The concept is that the car will utilise a lot of parts out of supercars, so engine, gearbox in particular, which are the big dollar items. The category was initially kicked off, I suppose, by supercars themselves. They then handed it over to a consortium that includes Wilson Security and Pace, who invest a lot of money via sponsorship into the sport. So they've underwritten this project, we understand. And the big question now is, will it get the kind of traction and the kind of reaction that I think they're hoping for to actually turn it into a category? And will there be enough demand for it to exist as a racing series next year and have the confidence to build cars so they can go racing?
So what's the answer to that?
Well, I think the honest answer is I don't know. And I don't think anyone knows if there's a market for it. The big controversy, Shebex, is that about 18 months ago, a Melbourne businessman and former editor of Motorsport News magazine and Auto Action, Chris Lambden, launched what was a very similar series. At a different level, it was more grassroots, different concept behind it, but it was called Formula Thunder 5000, is called Formula Thunder 5000. So all of a sudden now we've got two reasonably different but in the end quite similar open-wheel V8-powered 5000 open-wheel categories in the marketplace competing against each other, which is not the ideal scenario. So
far from it, I would have thought.
Yeah, correct.
It's going to be hard to run one category, let alone two.
Well, yeah, Australia can barely support all the categories it's got at the moment, and it's got a track record of not supporting open-wheel racing outside of the Grand Prix. So some common sense needs to prevail here, and somehow these parties need to get together and combine their resources and combine their potential support, because I know that the Chris Lambden Formula Thunder category's already had several cars sold and EOIs put in and things like that. So there needs to be some common sense at some point where we can get everyone on the same page and go, like, hang on, we've got two categories. This isn't going to work. How can we bring them together and just get one big grid of Wings and Slicks V8-powered open wheels, which I think everyone agrees would be an unbelievably cool thing. We all want that, right? We want loud, exciting open wheelers to test our drivers. So interesting times. But I think one way or another, we all hope it gets off the ground, because, A, Australia needs a top open-wheel formula, and it just opens all these possibilities. We could have a Tasman series again, go and race the Kiwis. You know, there's all these possible options of having a route to Formula One for young drivers in Australia, all of these good things. Let's just see what happens. But very early days, but an exciting concept. It's generated a lot of media, despite releasing the news at 6:30 on a Friday night, which seemed a little bit weird. Yeah, cool thing. Let's hope it works.
You know what annoys me the most, though, out of all this, and the fact that we don't support open-wheeler racing, as you said, outside of the Grand Prix, is the fact that we've got an absolute gun open-wheel driver like Tim Macro, who isn't driving this year because there isn't a series or a category for him to effectively drive in here in Australia. So he's working as a mechanic, I think, for Team BRM, and he looks after some Porsche cars. He looks after the Formula 4 cars for them as well. But outside of that, he's not doing any driving, and this is one of our best open-wheeler drivers in Australia. I mean, I'm not putting him in the same category as guys like Will Power and those sort of blokes who are Daniel Ricciardo, who are open-wheeler Formula 1 and IndyCar drivers, but at home, there's been no one close to him in the last 10 years.
No, you're right, 100%. 100%. That's always been the problem here, is that we've had so many young, talented drivers who can do the job. I mean, Tim's a three-time Australian F3 champion. They can do the job, but where do they go if they don't have the financial backing or the sponsorship or, in particular, the family money to go overseas and have a crack and get exposed? It's an unfortunate scenario. So a Formula 5000 kind of category, a peak category that has the kind of exposure that an F4 doesn't have or an F3 didn't have, where you could actually go and sell some sponsorship.
Yeah.
So Tim, who's a gun championship-winning open-wheel driver, might actually be able to get in the 5000, sell some sponsorship and fund his car racing, because it will be a high-profile, recognised category with great TV and great events and all the good stuff that supercars have got, let alone the support from the big championship as it is. So
correct.
I agree with you. I think it's vital that we get something like this for drivers like that. They sort of go hand in hand.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the other good news throughout the week was the fact that it had been announced that V8 Supercars, I should know better. VA Supercars, Virgin Australia Supercars Series, is a part of the Australian Formula One Series as a championship round now, which is fantastic news for them. Rick Kelly was at our station earlier on in the week on Afternoons with Francis Leach and spoke about Albert Park becoming a permanent part of the calendar now for the V8 Supercars as a championship round.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's a race of points anyway. It's always been one of those rounds where, for me, it's almost like, you know, there's no point racing. Like, what are you doing it for apart from extra damage? So from my point of view, I think it's really good because it's a chance to get out there and treat it as we would any other round, rather than trying to do different development things like some teams might do, or just taking a different mindset. I guess it's going to be a chance for us to sharpen our pencil and get some good results there. I wouldn't say chores. It's certainly a great opportunity for us to showcase ourselves in front of the world's greatest formula, obviously Formula One, and good commercial opportunity for us and stuff like that. But for me, I guess I live for every championship point and trying to get those points and work out a way of getting a solid championship position. So it just always carries with it, I think, a different mindset when there's no points up for grabs, whether that be a mindset of, for some time, you know, trying to go a bit harder because there's not much to risk from a championship point of view, or whatever it might be. It just gives us a chance, like I say, to bring it back to something that means the biggest thing for us, which is the points.
Well, we had to get rid of Bernie Eccleston for it to happen, but finally it's happened.
Yeah, look, I think we all agree, those of us that work in the sport, that it's the best possible outcome that we could have. And the no point thing Rick mentioned, I get that, absolutely, but you know, the teams for the most part enjoyed the Grand Prix weekend because A, it was a testing opportunity, and B, the exposure that came with it, high TV ratings, lots of audience, lots of corporates there already to get the supercar teams in front of that might not go to existing supercar rounds. So that was all good. But now it just adds to the value of that weekend, and it makes it a full-blown championship round. So it adds to our calendar in terms of points. It would have been an interesting story because we saw Fabian Coulthard and DJR Team Penske so strong there this year. So had you added in the four races we had for supercars at the Grand Prix this year into the championship, it might have changed the picture quite considerably. Mm. Some guys had pretty bad weekends. It's great. I don't think there's any negative to it. The big question for me is what formats do they use? Do they run the same four-race sprint format? Do they go to some longer races with pit stops? Bearing in mind at Formula One events, there's quite a big window in track activity before Formula One session. So there's, I think it's 45 minutes is the minimum time before the Formula One session starts that you can have something on track. So they need to fit it into the existing schedule, but they've got 4 days to play with, plenty of time. Let's see if they come up with something different, a different race format, something new, something that can shake things up for that special event, because it is a special event, as we all know. Let's see if they can come up with something different to shake up the order, and maybe a couple of races with pit stops and some without. Let's have some short, sharp sprints as well.
Well, there's talk about also that they could be, changing the format of Sydney Motorsport Park Racing for next year and maybe racing it under lights in a Big Bash type of format and putting the development cars in with the supercars as well. That'd make like a field of 40 to 45 cars, and it'd be just NASCAR style, the bottom 10 of each, I suppose, round or something, drop out.
Yeah, sign me up.
Oh, please, yes.
The only problem, the story that reported on that on the supercars website said it wouldn't be for points. Stuff that. Sign me up. Just make it a championship round as well. It's just throw it into the mix. The more varied formats we get, the more unpredictable motor racing we've got, the better the championship's going to be, the more open it'll be, the more people we have an opportunity to go into Newcastle to win it. Just make everything championship points. None of this no point stuff. Running it not for championship points just opens it up to be another Grand Prix where some people go there half-heartedly and don't give their 110%. Make it points, throw everything into the bag, just see what happens, see who comes out the other end. But I'm a fan of that, especially night racing. Big, big proponent for it. Great for TV ratings. Great for fans at the circuit. And we've seen what Big Bash has done for cricket. Let's do it for car racing.
Yeah, exactly. Have we had supercars night racing? We were going to try it at Queensland. Yeah. Did it happen in Tasmania a year or two ago?
No, well, yeah, impromptu night racing. I don't think they intended on it being dark at the end. Yeah, we have. The last time was 1997.
There
you go. Year one of supercars as a brand. It was introduced in 97. Colt Park, opening round of the championship, was won by Wayne Gardner, the Coke Commodore. That was the last time they went night racing in supercars. A year before that, actually end of 95, they ran at Calder for the Peter Brock Classic under lights.
There you go.
And then I think they ran at Eastern Creek on the short circuit there in 96 as well. But yeah, 97 was the last time it happened at Calder. So it's been a long time. And you'd think with the way that sport's going at the moment and prime time viewing being so important in that spectator experience that we would have done it sooner, but it's not a cheap thing to light a 4 or 5K racetrack compared to a nice couple of 100 metre square football ground, I suppose.
Exactly. Final one for you, mate. We go to Winton next weekend for the 101st running of the Shannons Nationals. It'll be your 100th running because I took you away for one race to go to the Indy 500 last year. Apologies for that. Oh, no apologies at all, actually.
No, I don't think we need to apologise.
Exactly.
No, I think that's fine.
What are we expecting up there next weekend?
Well, I'm digging out the thermal underwear, Shebeck.
Yeah.
Because, I checked my weather app this morning and it was -2 in Benalla.
We're at the bottom of the mountains being at Winton, and it is the opening of the snow season.
Yes, yeah. So we might get this
game right crazy
before we go to the racetrack. Yeah, look, it's going to be nippy, but for the most part, that's always a really good weekend weather-wise. The sun's always shining, might be a bit crisp, true, but a good weekend for motor racing. What's on the program there? Australian production cars race for the first time since Easter, since the Bathurst 6 Hour, and they're talking about a 30-car field, which will be outstanding, of all the best production cars in the country. So that's going to be good. They've got 200-300K races.
And young Will Brown will be a part of that as well. Of course, the Formula 4 champion from last year.
Yep. And Chas Mostert will be racing in that too, alongside Nathan Morecambe in the Ford Focus that almost won the Bathurst 6 Hour. GT Trophy is there, so GT cars with a couple of 1 hour races. What else is there? Australian Prototype Series is running. And the Porsche GT3 Cup presented by Pirelli there as well. So good little program, good little racetrack. Hopefully the sun shines and the frost gets off the racetrack before we get cars on it. But it should be a good weekend for the 101st into the second century now, Spec.
Yep, so get on down to Winton. It's only a couple of hour drive from Melbourne if you can. If you can't, you can catch all the action on thenationals.com.au. Crowsey, I'll catch you next week.
Thanks, mate. Look forward to it.
Get on your buddy on the grid for Bendix Brakes at your next car service. Make sure you ask your mechanic to fit Bendix Brakes. Don't accept anything else. We're talking MotoGP next.
On 1116 SEN, on the grid with Tony Shebeki for Bendix Brakes. At your next car service, ask your mechanic to fit Bendix Brakes. Don't accept anything else.
8 minutes to 9 o'clock, MotoGP in Italy this weekend, the Italian Grand Prix, home race for Valentino Rossi. And Mark Brax joins us to have a chat about it. G'day, Braxy.
G'day, Shebex. How are you, matey?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. Valentino Rossi, home race for him. He'll start on the front row, but not from pole position. Maverick Vinales is the man.
Yeah, just picked him at the last minute. He did for the pole position, but, it's been a pretty enthralling 4-3 practice sessions right through the whole weekend, actually. There was a big cloud over Valentino Rossi from the start, which is making his results even more remarkable. He was involved in a motocross training accident. You've got to ask yourself the question, why do they put themselves in that position?
We've had so many in the last couple of years that have injured themselves doing that sort of stuff.
Jack Miller is the one that comes to mind.
Correct.
From the beginning of last year, breaking his fifth.
Danny Pedrosa.
Some guys even have it written in their contracts that they do not do motocross. And after you've seen them, as you said, the results of the last few years, Shebex, you can understand why.
Yeah.
And Valentino had to go through a full medical on Thursday to make sure he was fit after lacerating his kidney and his liver in the accident. He copped the handlebar in the ribs when he came off a jump the wrong way. And it just proves that there's a fine line between success and disaster. And he was in a lot of pain on Friday, evidently. He could only 14th or 15th fastest time come Friday afternoon. But then he pulled something out of somewhere. We all say it's a family show, so we can't say too much about it.
No.
The free practice three yesterday morning was absolutely enthralling, and he got the fastest there in front of Marquette. And for a guy that's 38 years old, he was about 0.02 of a second off the fastest ever lap around Mugello. So he's in fine form, as we saw France a couple of weeks ago with him and Vinales, the youngest bloke on the grid and the oldest bloke on the grid, swapping lap records the entire race. And it looks set to continue this weekend at Mugello. It's got to be on... If you're a motorsport fan, whether it be two or four wheels, I think Mugello would have to be up there, like with the Monaco Grand Prix, because just the atmosphere... It's surrounded by, it's in a valley floor. The track meanders, well, meanders, it's up and down. It's a very technical track, very, very hard on the physical nature of the riders. And the crowd is absolutely ballistic. They're just a very, very great party atmosphere, and I recommend it to anybody. And today, 23 laps around the Mugello track with Rossi's injuries. Is he going to be able to do it? Well, you wouldn't discount him, would you, Shebex?
No, not at all.
As soon as that adrenaline goes, he's going to be right up there. You know, we've got the front row of the grid. We've got his teammate, Vinales, a championship leader with three wins under his belt, already going for number four from pole position. And then that's Rossi beside him, his teammate, and leading the way for the Ducati, Andrea Dovizioso. And then not far behind on the third row of the grid, Jorge Lorenzo, with probably his best qualifying, only to be half a second off the pace.
Well, now, this is a scary thing for the other riders, Braxy, is that Jorge said overnight that he's felt the most comfortable he's felt on the Ducati so far this year. So if he's actually starting to get used to this bike now, that means that the other riders beware, because Jorge is on the road up.
Well, even on pre-practice three, he actually went to the top of the time
there you go.
For a while. So... maybe the detractors will get off his back, and he's settled into this bike. He's got used to it. We all know it's a recalcitrant beast. It needs a lot of training and a lot of love.
I think a bit like yourself, Braxy.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's found the happy medium at the moment. Out of the top speeds, they're clicking 350 kilometres an hour, which in the old school is about 220 miles an hour down that very undulating main straight. The top eight bikes, seven of them were Ducatis in the top speed runs. If there's anywhere in the early part of the season, we're only a third of the way through the season at the culmination of this race, the Ducatis are going to be there. We've got Michele Pero is on the second row of the grid. He's the wild card for Ducati. Then we've got the two Hondas of Pedrosa and Marquez, fifth and sixth respectively. Pedrosa's another dark horse. He's finding some great form at the moment. Never discount Marquez. And like you said, don't discount Lorenzo. If he's on the pace, we're going to have a bottler of a race. And it's going to be, I'd hate to pick a winner, but I'm just shading for Dovizioso. I think it might be his day. If he can maintain the pace, because it's a real strategy race. You have 23 laps around this 5.5-kilometre track. You've got to be super fit, and it's a matter of managing your tyres and your stamina the best way. And, he's got the pace on the Ducati. It might be a bit harder to steer, but then look at Vinales. Is he going to pull number four out of his hat? He's certainly on the great form at the moment.
Yeah.
And all I can say, mate, is stick to your tellies at 10 o'clock this evening for one monumental race. Lorenzo's won, I think... He hasn't been off finish lower than second in the last 7 years at Mugello. He's the man with the form on the board for results. As you said, Shebex, he's said he's in the finest form and finding the most comfortable on the bike. He's on the third row of the grid, which when he's only half a second off, it doesn't matter. There's going to be a freight train of about six or seven bikes here. Valentino will be out to, and everybody will be racing with... with Nicky Hayden or something blazing somewhere on their helmet or their leathers or somewhere. And I think that is going to lift them all a bit. There's a lot of emotion in that paddock at the moment, especially with the display of Nicky's bikes in the paddock there at Mugello. So there's a lot of emotion running. And plus you've got the emotion and the passion of the Italians. They're expecting 120,000 people to pack in there today. And with Rossi on the front row of the grid, I think there might be another 20,000 that have been meandering their way up there right now to try and get a vantage point about that magnificent circuit in the Tuscan Hills.
No, you're actually absolutely spot on, Braxy. And I'm going to say this on behalf of both of us, because I know you get emotional about this topic as well, in regards to Nicky Hayden. Folks, if you're out there and you're looking at buying merchandise, Nicky Hayden merchandise, make sure you buy it from the official channels.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shonky people out there who are selling stuff and making and profiting from the unfortunate death of Nicky Hayden 2 weeks ago. Don't do it. Go to the appropriate channels and make sure you buy it properly. Braxy, we've run out of time as always, mate, but I hope I said that right.
Yeah, you did, mate. It was, it's been a very emotional time, and the family, I've sent them some stuff that I wrote and some press clippings, and I'll let him know that, let the family know that he had a lot of support and he was missed down here as well.
Exactly, mate. We've got to head off, buddy. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks' time.
No worries, mate. Have a good one.
You too, Braxy. That's On The Grid done. George Anikian with the Ultimate Rap joining me in just a tick.